From Sylvain Labs, welcome to Critical Nonsense. On our show, we dig deep into cultural ephemera and pose questions to each other to inspire interesting conversations. This is Critical Nonsense. This week, Aaron asks Joey about the relationship between compassion and creativity, and Joey asks Aaron about pettiness.
Oh, hello.
Ayo.
It's Joey.
It's Aaron.
And guess who else it is?
Tell us.
Executive producer and attendance award nominee, Jess Vander.
All right, come on. Oh,
hi, this is Jess. Fine, interrupt me, why don't you?
I'm like always wanting to cheer for you and be like, she's here. That was totally where that was coming from.
Could we do a real quick housekeeping thing?
Of course.
I just wanted to say, we have really great listeners.
We do.
This past week has been amazing and filled with notes from people. People have started using the corrections department applet. What would you call that?
Yeah, whatever the applet seems like a nice word on thisisnonsense.com.
People have started submitting things to the corrections department there, and all of the notes, even in corrections, have been so sweet, and I really appreciate the nice things that people have said to us. I just wanted to thank everyone for being kind and nice to us.
Yes, and we read every one of them, so write in, because we're curious about who's listening to this.
Yeah, so you can go to thisisnonsense.com, or you can just send us a note at criticalnonsense@sylvainlabs.com.
Ooh, that was like really nice and like it. Ready.
Yes.
Ready from the hip.
Don't be tardy for the party.
Well.
I skate right past Kim Zolciak. Just go.
You want to start, Aaron?
Yeah, why not? So there was a very momentous thing that happened last night,
and I'm sure
it's quite momentous, and everybody can probably see this coming from a mile away. RuPaul's Drag Race season finale last night.
Is this a spoiler alert moment or what?
So I am going to not, because I cannot talk about the episode in order not to have spoilers happen, not even going to share my thoughts, but you know, I'm obviously a huge RuPaul's Drag Race fan. I talk about it all the time, and drag culture, I love it. Pose is coming back very soon on FX. Yay.
Yeah, that was a very not emphatic yay.
Thrilling.
It's like, bring it down.
Truly wonderful yay. News. Yeah.
But one of the things that's really interesting about Drag Race is that over time, the show has gone from really being about creativity and essentially moving from creativity to being about drama and interpersonal drama. And it's something that I think has weakened the show over time. Mm. But what I always find really interesting is the interplay between the drama that happens on camera and all of the like contentiousness between the contestants and the creativity that all of them bring to the runway, to their to the acting challenges. Back when they did it, when they did sewing and creativity challenges, the creativity is palpable. And I'm sitting there watching these queens fight back and forth with each other. I'm watching other queens like be really tight with each other and like sharing secrets and materials to help them propel through the competition. And it makes me sit and wonder, what is the relationship between compassion and creativity?
I mean, this is interesting.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I mean, I think I genuinely don't have, I have like inklings of directional things that make me curious around like the ability to remove yourself from yourself in thinking of new things feels, you know, there's sort of like that historical relationship with certain types of mental illness and creativity and sort of in that case, it's sort of a dissociative nature of the mental illness that allows you to be removed from your own self. But I think the sort of everyday superpower version that we can have if, you know, we are neurotypical or mentally well or not struggling with something is the ability to try and see someone else and like get your mirror neurons firing and put yourself in their shoes to, and sometimes I think it's especially relevant in creativity because you're allowed to get like a out of body perspective on the thing that you're creating and I don't know if I'm confusing compassion and empathy right now. Like, I'm curious how you're thinking about compassion.
Yeah, I think, well, to me, one of the differences is actually the presence of self and the ability to sort of bring your full self to someone else and see them fully, rather than necessarily dissociating yourself in order to look at something creatively from an objective perspective. Because one of the things that is interesting, I was looking up a few studies that were about compassion and creativity. One study was actually about self-compassion and creativity. And the more, a study was comparing people who were self-described as being more self-compassionate versus self-judgmental. And the more self-compassionate people scored higher on a creativity test. And so there's something on one hand that's just about when you allow yourself to have doors open and you allow yourself freedom, you fundamentally can unlock more creative doors. But the other half of that too is compassion for others, of course. And I think that that has to do with letting your thoughts and their thoughts, your being and their being, truly intermingle. Because it's the whole 2 + 2 = 10 situation. Like you need to create more from what each of you have. And without that sort of true deep compassion, you can't necessarily pull all of that out and make the most of it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm always dubious of creativity tests.
Yes.
But that's like very off point. I think what's interesting about what you're talking about is and maybe ties a little bit with what I said in a tighter way. And like, as we've been talking, I'm thinking more about what compassion means and that idea, like you brought up the idea of self-care and kind of treating yourself well. I think there is sort of an orientation that compassion for others gives you of trying to care for others when you're creating something. Because ultimately, like the act of creation for good, bad, or other is ultimately for the consumption of someone else almost always, right? Like I think there are creative acts that can be just
self-congratulatory.
Or like you do like little moments for yourself that's not for anyone else. And that's certainly something different. But the idea of like, if you're creating something for other people and you demonstrate compassion for them, the reception of that thing inevitably seems like it would benefit from it, right? Like of thinking about the person that you're creating a thing for. Like in our world, the version of that is sort of like, you know, I'm like afraid to say like the design thinking idea. Like I have my own issues with sort of like the jargon that has arisen out of that. But I think the fundamental idea of it is like, if you're making something, if you're creating an object for commerce or for art or whatever it is, like thinking about the person that you're creating it for and like caring about that person seems like it can only benefit.
Maybe this is a less fuzzy and happy thought around this, but I kind of think of compassion as just another kind of EQ and consciousness. And I wonder if
consciousness or conscientiousness?
Yeah.
Yes, both.
And when you have a person who is more conscious of their surroundings and conscientious of others, I wonder if that is also, you know, like if that's actually the causational link between compassion and creativity more than, you know, you have a feeling bone in your body. It's more like, are you just a more aware person? And because you're more aware of things beyond you, you get more sparks to make more linkages for original ideas. Because if you're only looking in, there's no new stuff coming in.
Right.
I love that so much. Because I think we were talking about this yesterday on something else. But like this idea of being hyper-perceptive and also hyper-observant, which I think are two different things. One is about being able to see what's going on and really being able to sort of open your third eye and like pay attention to everything around you. But then the perceptiveness is about almost like activating upon that, being able to truly engage with it in some way and like give it depth and texture. And I do think that there's like an interesting parallel between compassion and like just having all of your spiciness spicing.
I mean,
activate spicy.
I'm curious as we talk about this, whether, because I think I've fallen into the trap a little bit of saying like, this is sort of a universal benefit to creativity. And I'm like immediately questioning myself in the arena of sort of like, is this one flavor of creativity and there are other flavors? Because we have sort of like the historical, like ultra narcissistic
yes.
creativity also, which can produce like really great things. But I also feel like when we consume those things, we don't feel as good as the person like taking in the art or creation or whatever in the same way that we do if someone, it feels like it's like made for us or made for someone else, you know?
Do you mean like the eureka moment or, you know, like Newton being like, aha, and yes. suddenly I have the idea.
I mean, I was like thinking, because it's me, I'm thinking of like Kanye, where like I love his music or most of his music, not universally, but
only 808s and Heartbreaks.
Yeah, I mean, I really love 808s and Heartbreaks.
So good.
especially, you know, like Pinocchio's
yes,
story,
Pinocchio story yeah.
live in Singapore for like 10-minute version
yes,
of it.
Yes.
No, but like that version of things, like everyone talks about Kanye as sort of a narcissist, and I don't think that's like a controversial opinion. I think like in so many ways he talks about himself as a narcissist without using those specific words, but that realm of things of just like a ultra self-involved person who is hyper fixated on one thing and producing it can create something great, but at the same time, like there's a feeling that you get in consuming that doesn't feel as like warm and fuzzy necessarily is as something like what you're talking about, where there's sort of this moment where the people are like coming together and there's like warmth in it and you know it was intended for you. Like I'm thinking about like you know, like Ava DuVernay films, or like where mm-hmm. she's like there's a thing in the world that needs to be talked about and it's oriented on like giving voice to the voiceless and those ideas where there's a compassion, or like, you know, this is not like a world-changing one, but the song that Logic had done mm-hmm. around the suicide hotline yeah. number, I think like for the people who that's affected, it was like you made this for me, and it was like such deep gratitude on their part that they could tell like this thing was created for someone else, not created for me. And I think you can feel it, right? Mm-hmm. Like there is like a texture to your point that arises out of something that is made with compassion versus something that is made for myself, but you can have it too.
I love this idea of like compassion in the art for the consumer, basically the
yeah.
person, because I hadn't been thinking about it that way. Like I was thinking of it as compassion for fellow creators, or I guess compassion for those that are like contributing. But what I love about this idea of just, it's essentially, who is this art? Who is this thing being made for? Is it being made for me? Is it being made for essentially for me? Like Kanye, it's great. It's awesome. It's the best music ever. But this is just because I have to, like my job is to produce this.
Yeah.
Or is it about like seeing someone and creating something for those people?
I mean, it's why like Lemonade is for Black girls, right? Like
yes.
it's for everybody,
yes.
but it's for
Absolutely.
Black girls.
Yeah.
And that whole film is for Black girls and mm-hmm. like Find Your Power and like this is for you. This was made for you. Like these are our stories type of idea. Mm-hmm. And that's like, that's part of why the Beehive exists, is just like, they feel like Beyonce is making things for them and they want to protect her, because there is that it is sort of like the reciprocity of the compassion of the creation.
Mm-hmm.
But to your point, the compassion among creators is like an entirely different question.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much of that exists right now.
Beyonce is a great example of this. So if you think about how she's Michael Jackson-like, in terms of being fastidious about like the music, the orchestration, the writing, all of that.
Love of gloves.
And also a good boot. Like she got good boots. But
a nice
like
penny loafer.
Yeah. But it's interesting because, you know, no one knows that much about Beyonce's creative process. But we do know that it isn't a one-woman show. She does
yeah.
have a strong creative bench
mm-hmm.
that is like that she's working with and she's creative directing. Mm-hmm. But like that idea of, do you need to have compassion in order to have the right creative filter for how to make the best work?
Yeah.
And I do believe that that is the case. That's why she had like the marching band from all the different schools for homecoming, like, or for the Coachella, for Beychella performance. Like she recognizes what that means to get those people in the room to make this work the best that it could be.
Yeah, that's always, that's like a side question. And I'm assuming no one from the Bayhive is listening to our show, but maybe they are, and I should be careful.
You're going down.
That's like the thing I've always wondered about is that Beyonce gets all of sort of like the central credit, but your point, it is like this army of people that have come together, and it, you never hear any like bad stories coming out of the camp.
Right.
So it, maybe it's like a complete non-issue, but I've always wondered about that, right? Like in the creation of Lemonade or things like that, it's like, you know, it's like 10 different directors and like different songwriters. Like she is sort of like that central curator and the person bringing things together and making it coherent. And I've always wondered like who else, like Beyonce is Beyonce, but it's also like Beyonce is like a figurehead of like a bigger thing that's happening, you know,
which is like what all artists kind of like. Lady Gaga did the same,
yeah,
or went through the same sort of conversations. And I'm not opening up this whole can of worms.
Yeah,
I'm still gonna say it though, which is basically, and I'd like to get into this at some other podcast episode, but we should be, why don't we call Beyonce a genius, and why do we call Kanye a genius? Because
do people not call Beyonce? I feel like Beyonce's a genius.
I think that women are held to a different standard in music when it comes to the title of genius. And I think it's wrong. That's my.
It's cool. Shutting it down. just going to throw this hot take in here and just back away.
I've got a
slowly.
Lot of conversations and thoughts about Aretha Franklin and why we don't talk about her
genius.
As a genius.
Oh, wow. Actual genius.
Actual genius. And the work that she did compared to the work that James Brown did, like as far as like what her role in creating music and. Being
creating a record label. And,
absolutely. Yeah. But like the moniker of genius doesn't as often fall on Aretha. People just think of her as a great singer or a great performer.
I don't think of James Brown as a genius, but I do think of Aretha as one. But like, I'm not like saying anything in public places being like, you know, like, listen.
Okay. This was wrong of me to open up this can of worms. And now.
But if you have thoughts,
yes,
let us know. Yes.
And I just feel compassion for you.
Yeah, oh, I feel compassion for y'all. So, Betty. Hi, Fiddlesk.
Hey, Fiddlesk.
What you got going on, Joey? What's in your mind?
Walking up walkways, walk all over me on the walkway.
I'm following.
No, I think there's going to be some connection to the beginning of the last topic.
How compassionate of you.
Oh, thank you. I just considering your needs and feelings.
So
I've been thinking recently about this idea of pettiness. Because the place where we're in right now in culture is like, I think it's fair to say like we glorify pettiness now, or certainly like celebrate it. Go ahead.
For example.
So recently, there's been drama in the NBA, both around, unfortunately, my favorite team, the Celtics. But also the Lakers, I think, have been a more prominent. And so one of the players from the Celtics came and did like a episode on First Take, which is Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman's show, and was just basically just like dragging his whole team. He's like, this guy's got an attitude, and like Terry Rozier's got to play Terry Rozier. Like, I didn't get to bring my like full game to the table, like all of this stuff. And it was pretty petty. Like the season was over, and he was upset and was petty. And also, Magic Johnson quit his... I don't know if you guys know this, the sports ball. Quit his job unexpectedly, didn't tell anybody after like the last game of the season, was like, cool, I'm leaving, so mm-hmm. let's do a 45-minute impromptu press conference, and I'm just going to say weird shit at, wow. like that I wanted. I'm quitting because I just want to be back on Twitter. But then there's also like the other side of this. Like, so those are like celebrities being petty, but there's like the pettiness that happens on social media where, you know, like there are like GIFs dedicated just to pettiness, or, you know, like in some ways, like what's the tea, I think maybe is also like pettiness, I'm realizing. And so I'm just wondering, like, in a kind of culture where we're starting to celebrate, if, or at least be entertained by pettiness, like, is it doing something bad to us?
Oh, the petty brigade. Oh, the petty brigade. So, like, I've
petty
got...
Petty Lubel.
Ooh. Ooh. Petty Mayonnaise.
Ooh. Petty Lubel would actually be a good drag name.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. God, we've done it. Oh, ooh, this... I'm working overtime on this. Well, so one thing... There's like, a long arc, and I have to put Donald Trump in that
yeah.
arc, which is about transparency and communication, a different standard of decorum and propriety mm-hmm. that we are now in, and a disregard and impatience for that sort of traditional propriety.
Yeah.
And all of that to me comes into this cocktail of like, get to the point and say what you mean. Like, I don't want diplomatic answers, and I don't want like bullshit. I just want like, just give me the facts.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes out in like uber petty.
Yeah. I think, go ahead.
You say what you're going to say, and then I'll say what I'm going to say because it's separate.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say the without going into politics, like the recent thing in the last 2 days that has been like ultra pettiness is the covering of the USS John McCain's
yes.
sign when he was going into going to Japan and coming into the naval base. And so just like, the idea that he would be like fly off the handle because he saw John McCain's name somewhere, mm-hmm. even though it was named after his grandfather and father,
mm-hmm.
Is sort of, that's like a prime example of pettiness. But it is like, when it comes down to it, it is like litigating everything and sort of finding the need to like fight every single fight, right?
Yeah, there's this concept in competitive debate called spreading, and it is particularly with policy debate. And the way it works is in policy debate, you versus your opponent are basically marked down on how many different arguments you make and then how many arguments you are able to rebut of your opponent. If you ever listen to somebody doing policy debate, they're going to be talking super fast, like crazy fast, high pitch, and just like, it doesn't even sound like words. They're just like shooting out all sorts of things because they're trying to get as many arguments out as possible and hoping that their opponent misses some when they get up to the stand. And the thing about that is because the entire world around policy debate is like fastidious, if we're going to use the word again, record keeping, right? Like, there is evidence that you said this at one time, and what? Did you not say anything back to that thing? And the reason I bring this up is because I feel like now where everything is written down, it's in a tweet, you know, it's publicized somewhere, there's evidence of XYZ. If you don't spread, right? If you mm-hmm. don't try and cover all of those gaps, does that mean you're leaving yourself vulnerable?
Mm-hmm.
The death of vulnerability in light of the rise of pettiness is like,
They're related.
They're
right?
so related. Like the idea that also you're always under attack, or that you're always in attack mode, and therefore you always have to be debating. Mm-hmm. Like you have to be in debate mode is part and parcel of today. Like the belief that someone's coming for you. Like you don't know when.
Yeah.
You don't know where. But they gonna snatch your wig. Like that's what drives like all that. Like let me be petty because I don't know when it's coming. I got to be in boxing stance.
Yeah, there's like a couple things here that like as we're talking about it, there's one component of this that I think that is important to address is that the cultures that I think like pettiness culture online has come out of in some ways is appropriative, mm-hmm. right? Like I mm-hmm. think pettiness is one thing when you are sort of socially or status-wise undervalued or in like the lower rungs of economic status, social status, whatever it is. Like you feel under attack, and in reality,
you are
in a lot of ways you are, right? Yeah. And so fighting, like feeling like you have to fight everything, is sort of where pettiness can be born out of. The difference is when you are at the top of the ladder, mm-hmm. and you're beefing down, like that pettiness is like, you have everything, like why are you being petty now? And the reality is, like, there are studies now that are showing that we don't like petty people. Mm. Like, so that's like in online when we're consuming it, and it's like dramatic, or like in RuPaul's Drag Race, like increasingly mm-hmm. going towards this drama, and I don't know, I don't watch it, so I don't know if it's like getting to the level of petty.
Oh my God, the wig gate. Literally, the wig gate on this season is so stupid. I'm sorry.
Can you share without this? Yes, we need to know wig gate.
Yeah, so short version is, one queen accidentally left her wigs in her station after she was eliminated. And other queens then took those wigs, assuming that she had left them for everybody. And then she found out afterward and was like, so y'all just took my wigs. Okay, that's cool. And then all the other queens were like, one other queen was like, oh, well, we were best friends, so she did leave that one for me. And it's just been going on and on for weeks. And I'm like, shut up. I don't care. This is not a storyline.
Yeah.
This is what I'm talking about when I say that Drag Race has turned a corner. Like, let's get back to creativity, please.
Right, but it's like inconsequential. Completely like that's like part of what's like the pettiness thing is. Of yes. Like when like Azalea Banks and like Lana Del Rey are like fighting over like just like utter nonsense, but everyone's like, the girls are fighting. Like, yeah. You know, like...
And we're also, I mean, there's an element to the online debates with celebrity, debate is such a kind way to say it, with celebrities, where it's like, we're all constantly looking for our teams.
Yeah.
And it's that like being, you know, more alone than ever before. It's like, ooh, there are people that are like me. Yes. Oh, I've got a kindred spirit. And it's around attacking dumb shit. Like,
yeah.
Like it is tribal. Like there's a fundamental tribalism to it online.
Yeah. And the mindset too, that you get in when you're like fighting real things.
Yeah.
Like sometimes then I think you're just stuck in this fighting mindset. And so like little shit happens and you're like treating it, you know, like the mountain out of a molehill type of mentality of just, you're always fighting. That one of the studies that I saw about pettiness was like, they were using a couple different things, but they showed people Venmo profiles and they gave like sample ones of like asking, would you want to hang out with this person or would you want to be this person's friend? And it would be like someone put like $34.95. Mm. Do you put $34.95 or did you put $35? Mm-hmm. And people are like, I don't want to be friends with the $34.95 person.
Hold up. I have so many strong feelings about this particular subject matter because...
You petty.
Maybe. I'll admit it. But the other thing is, rounding, I feel like, leaves more room for like someone being presumptuous, right? Like, oh, I assume that you, like, I'm going to round to this number and you have to be okay with that, versus this is exactly what you owe. Like when I buy my coffee, I'm not like, is it cool if I just pay 10 cents less just so I, you know, like, it's exactly what you owe. Or in Venmo, the feature that I recently discovered that I think is the coolest thing, where you can actually just put in the math as a calculator directly into the sum. So you could be like, you owe this much money divided by four if you split it among four people. And then it just does that for you. I think it takes less effort to not round than to round.
Not if you round up.
I'm on board with the round, or I'm on board with not rounding, only because out of a little bit of respect and a little bit of like, it's actually the opposite side of pettiness, where I don't want someone coming for me later and being like, so you're the friend that always like is just giving away 5 extra cents all the time. Like there's just something to that. That's not a thing.
No, but that's the thing. It's like, why are you trying to show you're a big shot with the extra 43 cents? No, thank you.
It's a little signal, even though just the round. I can't deal with that.
All right, we'll take it back. Where was this going before? You were sharing this wonderful study.
But the other thing is like, they're showing pettiness in that particular study in other places as well, like dating profiles where they ask questions of like, how much would you help a friend? And there's like generosity pettiness as well that can happen. So they're like, how much would you help a friend? And they show sample dating profiles and who would you be more likely to date? And it's like an hour and 56 minutes, 2 hours, or 2 hours and 4 minutes. And people aren't more likely to date the 2 hour and 4 minute person. They're like, no, 2 hours person is the, they're like not like getting lost in like the micro details and like focused on sort of these like little things. And but online we're getting so petty. And it sort of makes you like realize like, are we going to like start hating ourselves? Like,
well, there's a mini part of it though.
Just like, I would do
me. Oh no, I'm so upset. This is all me.
Well, maybe it's a good thing.
I feel attacked.
Yeah, I feel very attacked. There is catharsis in pettiness though. There is. There's like a thing that's like, you don't have to hold yourself back from like, that propriety that I was talking about before. It's like, you have to hold so much in to just be, did it just be like, no, the shoes are blue. They're not cerulean. They are just blue. Like there's a thing. Yeah. It's like, you see stupid. Like I don't like the way that your eyes look. This is a very odd, it's a very odd demonstration of pettiness. I blame the coffee this morning, but
that idea of pettiness, it's interesting because I feel like for some people, they might think of pettiness as, you just don't let, you have a higher threshold mm-hmm. for things getting to you, right? Mm-hmm. But there's another lens that it sounds like you might be saying, Aaron, which is everything gets to you. And so therefore you can just like spring it right back out. And it's like, haha, I'm free.
Yes, yes.
I'm unburdened by my pettiness.
I love yeah. this. Oh, that's what Tom Petty must feel like.
Yeah.
Oh, oh gosh.
She's a good girl. Loves her mama.
I think it's over.
Yeah, I think it's over.
Yep.
I will just say, I just want to say at the last point, like in that study, they also talked about in relationships that like if you're petty in relationships, it decreases happiness. So
gotta let shit.
Let it go.
Let it go.
There we go.
Yes.
We've had two songs.
Can't hold it back anymore.
I am so glad that we finally got a Jess song. I am so happy. Jess Menzel.
Justin Adela Dazim. Jessica Dazim. Right.
Oh my God, Jessica Dazim.
Critical Nonsense is a Sylvain Labs production.
Recorded in MacGyver Studios in New York, New York.
Special thanks to executive producer and Disney character, Jess Vander.
Oh, and also sound engineer and cuttlefish, Alex Kantel.
We'd also like to thank designer Nora Mestrich for just, you know, like being like a cool bird.
Ah, and the production help that we get from Sarah Gilbert, Les Jacobs, and Tony Vaughn.
And as always, thanks, Alan.
Appreciate you.
We'd like to give special thanks to wig thieves everywhere.
Oh, they snatching. They snatching every which way. I'd also like to thank Jessica Dazim, who just walked in the room and we did not know. And God, she's amazing.
Is this Jess's like alter ego?
This is Jess's John Travolta.
Yeah.
Adina Menzel alter ego. Yes. Got it.
John Travolta from Hairspray, though.
Specifically, you're right. You're right.
Got it.
Ooh.
You just oop.
I'd like to thank Jasmine Masters for making I Just Oop a thing. Like she did. That's her.
I have to tell you, I would also like to thank her because I saw someone put it online like 3 weeks ago and I was like, where does this meme come from? Like, I want to know. I spent about 20 minutes trying to figure it out and I watched the original video and I was dying.
Jasmine Masters is a genius.
If you haven't, just search... What's the phrase? I just oop. Yeah.
I'd like to thank Exact Change.
I'd like to thank Yo Petty Express. Toot toot.
I would like to thank Compassion.
Yeah.
For Jess's pettiness.
Yes. We need to express said compassion. Ooh. Damn it, I just ooped again. I'm sorry.
I would like to thank whoever sends us videos of Jess in the debate team.
Yes.
Jess. I actually did public forum and for a brief stint parliamentary debate, not policy because that's not fun. Ooh, come at me.
The corrections department that's about to get inboxed.
Yeah. I would like to thank whoever listens through to the end of these thank yous.
Yes.
This is the one thing where I have to say, like, I laugh at how stupid we are when I listen to it. Like, Becky's like, what are you laughing at? And I'm just like, we're so dumb.
Me.
Yeah. So I'd like to thank me. Yeah. Thanks, me.
Thanks, you guys, for being yourself.
Yes. Money, please. Exact change.
Ooh, ooh. All clad.
Searing sounds yeah, like.
It does. All clad D3 skillets. Get that shit. Because, oh my God, you will get a perfect sear on everything.
Mm. Who's gonna take that large skillet? Okay.
We're both just came with.
That's the sear.
Yeah.
That is the sear.